problems in terms that the left has had in confronting these movements?
The real problem, Juan, is this, that all political parties, prior to the rise of these extreme right parties that the professor was talking about, prior to that, we had a center-left and a center-right. Both of them supported the economic system we call neoliberalism, a very extreme, rampant type of turbocharged capital, which wrecked the social structure of many of these countries, privatized large industries, entered into the domains of health and most sacred and hallowed sections of the old post-Second World War state. And that collapse, and the fact that parties of the center-left and center-right, whenever they came to power, did exactly the same thing. I wrote a book called The Extreme Center about these groups. They've now been shown to be what they were, which is useless. So there's a great hostility against these politicians, and there is nothing on to the left of them in most places. France is an exception. And what people do now is turn to the right, saying, we've tried all these jokers out. These guys are talking what seems to be our language. Let's see what they're like. And from that point of view, this big turn to the far right, in a sort of curious way, it's fitting that the champion now sits at the White House, the most right-wing president in recent years, especially on the domestic front. So there is a symbiosis taking place between the European far right and the far right government we seem to have got in the United States, and how they will work together. I mean, one problem they have is, and this should be talked about, that Zelensky's government in Ukraine, its hardcore, are not just people who are far right, but they are actual lineal descendants of Ukrainian Nazis who have been fighting. We shouldn't forget that, too. It's part of the picture. Just because the West is backing Ukraine doesn't mean that these things are not going on there. So it's very difficult to give this a gloss. What is happening in the West as a whole is pretty disastrous. It's not just Orban. He's very open, like Trump. Yeah, this is what we're doing. We don't care what you think. We're going to do it. We've been elected. We have the power to do it. There are people like that, but there are another layer of people who supposedly oppose them, who, when it comes down to it, have policies which are not all that different. I mean, what the United States and much of Europe needs today is an opposition which fights back politically, intellectually, with arguments, and when necessary, comes out on the streets, extra parliamentary actions to defend democracy.
We just have 30 seconds. The most important message following up on that, rising up at the grassroots, you feel people need to hear around the world now from your decades of activism.
I think we need activists more than ever before. I mean, one of the most amazing things has been this opposition by students in this country, occupations of universities in defense of the people, the Palestinians and the people of Gaza. We now need to extend these movements to what is happening domestically.
We're going to continue this conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Tariq Ali, Pakistani-British historian, activist, filmmaker, editor of the New Left Review. Latest book, You Can't Please All, Memoirs 1980 to 2024. Happy birthday to Messiah Rhodes, Dante Terrieri, and Rustam. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez.
at me at the wheel. I stole a kiss at the turn of a mile. My curiosity running wild. Cruising and playing the radio. With no particular place to go. Riding along in my
WRCT Pittsburgh. Music for people on the go.
I to tell her the way I feel. So I told her softly and sincere. And she leaned and whispered in my ear.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
The One World Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana, broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, diversity, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
When all the fears you have, you can believe me. Oh, I'll be standing by your side. Just have a little faith in me.
This is One World Radio, an international collaboration between 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, and 89.5 Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. And our guest today is Brother Chris Sweeney. Brother Chris, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Good to be here.
Now, Brother Chris, before we get into anything, you currently, how you got into everything we're going to talk about today is through your role with the Brothers of the Sacred Heart. For those who don't know, what is the Brothers of the Sacred Heart? And how did you get involved in it?
Well, the Brothers of the Sacred Heart are a religious community of men who take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And I joined out of high school. I went to the Brothers School in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I just felt God called me to do something different with my life. And after some discernment, I discerned for the priesthood too, but discernment, I really felt called to missionary work as well, which was what led me to spend time in Africa.
I want to get into the thing about how missionary work and spending time in Africa. How did you decide, you'd mentioned you got the calling. What was the moment of you when you really got the calling and was able to say, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life? Because that's a very powerful thing.
Yes, it is. And not many people are responding to that call these days. For me, it was I had gone to a year of college, and during that first year of college, I really started thinking about what I wanted to do with my life. And it was really one day of looking at myself in the mirror and asking myself, what makes you happy? For me, that reality was helping people. I wanted to help people. I really wasn't in this for the money, or, you know, all that material success was not important. I said, that's not what makes you happy. I've been around that and I've seen it. And that's not where the key to the happiness was. It was helping people. So that's what led me to starting to discern to really ask God what God wanted me to do with my life. And then so I eventually led me to the brothers who taught me in high school. So I was familiar with them.
And I know there's obviously a big commitment in religious life to helping people and helping others. You spent 12 years in Africa rebuilding a school with three other brothers. What inspired you to do that? And what really came into play when you were going there?
The brothers were looking to go to a different country in Africa. We had already been in many countries in Africa, including Kenya, Zambia, Zimbabwe. But the brother wanted to open up into a new country. So they asked for volunteers to go into Mozambique and to rebuild a school. We had been asked by a bishop from Mozambique to come and rebuild a school. So I volunteered, and for some reason they chose me, and I was one of four brothers. We had a brother from Zimbabwe, a brother from Brazil, a brother from Spain, and myself from the United States, who all went there and with really nothing, started working from day one to rebuild the school. And it's now has 1,300 kids and 200 boarders, and about 50 of those boarders are orphans from the area. I wish I was back there, but unfortunately I had to come back.
Mm-hmm. What really inspired you to say, I know you spoke about helping people and that's what called you to the order, but what really inspired you to say, I'm going to leave everything that I know behind? Because that really is another like big decision. I'm going to leave this all behind and I'm going to go to Africa and I'm going to do this. What really inspired you to do that?
Well, I had always heard stories from the older brothers that I lived with who had been in Africa, especially southern part of the United States. Our brothers had two or three schools in Uganda. That's where I went for about 3 months of my novitiate. I went to work in Uganda, and ever since then, I wanted to get back. And I was always tell the leadership here that I wanted to get back to Africa if the opportunity arose. So it did, and they finally told me, and I volunteered, and we were under direction from our superior general in Rome at the time. So I kind of had to leave the United States and get involved in a whole different area, a whole different culture, obviously. But it was great. I loved it. I loved the simplicity. I loved the life. The people were incredible. And that's what kind of keeps you going day to day, is the people that you meet and people that you work with.
You could just mention for our listeners where they were from again, all the different brothers?
Yeah, we had four brothers there. One from Brazil. He was originally in Canada, but he was a missionary in Brazil, spent 30 years. So he knew the language. Language, by the way, in Mozambique is Portuguese. They speak Portuguese along with their local language. So I had to learn a new language too, which I never was great at, but I tried. So we had the brother from Brazil, brother from Spain, and Portuguese is a little bit closer to Spanish. So, he had a little bit easier time with the language. And then our brother from Zimbabwe. You know, the Africans are incredible because they kind of naturally learn different languages, and he picked up Portuguese pretty quickly, actually. So it was us four of us that started there.
How was it with all the different brothers from around the world, kind of from all different places, putting all your cultures together to rebuild this school? And what was that process like?
Yeah, you have to, you don't really forget your culture, but you have to become a part of who you're working with, really. You really become, I won't say you become African, but you live the way they live. I mean, as I said every day, it's more, when you come here, it's more like camping out. like you would think you're camping out in the United States. This is how we lived every day. We didn't live in mud huts and grass roots which most of the people in our village lived. We lived in, if you had to pick a poorest part of Mozambique, that's where we were. We were in the poorest part of Mozambique, where people lived very simply. Hardly anybody had electricity or running water. So you learn how to deal with that.
So, see, I couldn't imagine. Lydia, could you imagine no electricity and no running water? Could you imagine that, living in that circumstance?
Crazy enough, we've had a couple of those here in South Africa as well, where we would get blackouts for like 4 hours or up until the next day. And sometimes people short on water. So I kind of understand Brother Chris what he's talking about, actually.
See, I couldn't imagine. I really couldn't. I mean, we've had power outages in my area, but I really couldn't imagine anything to that extent. Because you were saying you were in the poorest area of Mozambique.
The school that we came, that we rebuilt, was built back in the 50s by the Franciscans. Although it was still a physical building, there was nothing. Of course, no desks, no doors, no windows. It was just a shell of a building. So we were lucky enough to get help from foundations in Spain. The big one was Manos Unidas, is one of the biggest ones. That helped us at least get the funds to do the rebuilding part of it. So once we secured the funds, then we could get to work and start rebuilding. You just take it one day at a time. That's what happens in Mozambique, and I guess in many parts in Africa. You take one day at a time. You deal with all the little problems, and every day there's going to be a problem. Plumbing, whether it's a snake. Mozambique has some of the deadliest snakes in the world. That's the biggest killer in Mozambique are snakes, by the way. Black mamba, green mamba, puff adder, spitting cobras, they're all there, right there in the long grass. So you try to keep the grass cut short and keep the snakes away.
What you were saying regarding that kind of one day at a time, that simple approach to rebuilding something, what was, before you guys got there, with the students that you were bringing in, because I know you built a girls' dorm, and you had students come in at Parents' Day and what you had shared with us. What was that really, what was the education system like in this area with these students before you guys got there? Was it strong? Was it not so great? Because you were saying it was one of the poorest areas.
Yeah, before we got there, if you wanted to go to high school, you had to get transportation to in order to go to the next town, which that would cost money. I mean, not a whole lot to us, but it was a lot to them. And very few had money for transportation to go to the school. So there's one thing about Mozambique is that there's no lack of kids. I mean, we had 1,300 kids in the school. We could probably have 2,000. And one of the big differences that I noticed coming back to the United States was just, you know, the kids there really want to really take their education seriously. And there's no behavior problem. They really respect the teacher, whether it's me or whether it's a Mozambican teacher. That part of it is really nice to see, kind of a big difference between schools here in the United States even.
Why do you think there is more of that appreciation and people like myself? Because like I was saying before, I can't imagine some of these circumstances. Do you think it's because you don't know how good you have it until you don't have it anymore? Do you think it's something along those lines with these students?
Yeah, something like that. And the shocking thing is that really there's not much after high school. I mean, I'd bet about 10% maybe go to college if they can get the money or get a scholarship to go to college. So even though, and their jobs, I mean, unemployment rate is ridiculous. Something like 70% or something. There are no jobs in the area, so. But they still want to be educated. They still want to go through that. I think the parents instill that in them as well, that they need to get an education. And they take it, they take it seriously.
How do you set them up for the next stage of life?
Yeah, there are some trade schools nearby our village, so they would try to get in those, but there's just not enough spaces for all the ones that once was very competitive to get in those places. It's tough. I mean, this is, like I said, this is one of the poorest countries in the world. They're in the top, Mozambique is in the top 10 least developed countries in the world. And there's just no development problems there with corruption, with the health. The health system is something that we can talk about too. As well, they're the worst health system in the world, I think, which is one of the reasons why I had to leave, because I had malaria. I got malaria more than 30 times while I was there. Two or three times a year, I would get malaria. You know, in the United States, we have one doctor for every 270 people. In Mozambique, there's one doctor for every like 20,000 people. They just don't have the doctors. They don't have even the health system is corrupt. So it's not a good, it's not an easy place to live.
I'm talking about, you know, the country being corrupt and the health system as well. So how does it, like you said, you caught malaria there. So how do things work on that side when it comes to health?
Yeah, malaria is a big killer in Mozambique, especially to babies and the elderly. They can get the medication. But the problem is, and it's cheap, the problem is there's just not enough of it. When you get malaria, it really just about every instance, when you're talking about health, you're talking about malaria. Whether you have a cold, whether you have the flu, or whether you have any other sickness, you go to get tested and you have malaria, so you got to get rid of the malaria.
And, you know, talking about the healthcare system being corrupt, and it is one of the poorest countries in the world. Having to come all over the country to come and build the school, it just shows how the country is, how it needs a lot of help. Like, I want to know, like, what is the education, how was the education system like for the children with disabilities? Because there are children with disabilities and they also need schools. So through your work, were you able to help them out as well?
Yes. I mean, we really tried to hold the teachers accountable. Hardest thing, I think, in Mozambique before we got there was there was very little accountability from the teachers. So unfortunately, the corruption included the education system. Students pay for grades. I hate to say it, but it's true. Students are abused. That goes on. You hear about it from in all other different schools around us. But I mean, with us there and holding teachers accountable and making sure they do what they're supposed to do. This is why more and more students wanted to come to our school, because they knew the teachers were good. And it was just something that we had to instill, and it took years to get it to where it's supposed to be. And it's still got a ways to go. But yeah, it's unfortunate that corruption includes the kids. But, you know, when all you know is corruption and you've had it from elementary school to high school, and then if you become a teacher, you've even had it in college. That's all you know. When the teachers become teachers, and that's all you know, then that's how you operate. You just have to learn how to do it in a different way, and that's what. It's changing. It's changing, but it's just slowly. It's going to take generations to change it, just because of, like I said, this is how they've learned that to operate, and they have to learn differently.
And it will take time, because it's what they know, they were taught. For them, this is normal. Corruption is normal to them.
Correct. You're right.
And I would like to just tap into your story where you embarked on this incredible 6,000-mile bike journey.
From day one, when I was in Mozambique, once we finally got the internet, I would watch almost either a short video on YouTube about people doing bicycle tours in the U.S. and around the world. I said, you know, one day whenever I leave Mozambique, that I'm going to do this. I'm going to go do a bike ride. And I had many other reasons why it would take me a long time to go through all of them. But, of course, my nephew with Down syndrome is the one that we raised money for. And that was one of the big reasons, just the realization, because I almost lost my life a few times in Mozambique. So once that happens to you, you know, you look at life a little differently and you kind of realize that, you know, life is short. And if you have something you want to do, you better just go do it. So luckily, the brothers let me ride my bike around the United States. It was an incredible journey.
While you were traveling across the country on your bike, how long have you been on the road? And like you've mentioned, the journey was before, having people come up to you. How was it?
It's incredible. You know, people can't believe what you're doing. It's like, you're doing what? I said, yeah. So I rode between 50 and 70 miles a day for 5 months. I took a couple of days off here and there when I had a nice place to stay. But for 5 months, getting on the bike every day, it was an incredible experience in all kind of weather. I went through snow. I went through lots of rain, cold, and heat.
And were there any challenges along the way? How did that even happen, you know, having to take, just stop and have a place to rest and come back the next day? Did you pack food? How did it go?
One time I spent 6 hours pedaling uphill. 6 hours. So I would stop and walk, take breaks. So I'm kind of a big guy with a heavy bike. So going over mountains was probably the hardest part. But the best thing about getting over the mountains is going downhill, going 40, 50 miles an hour downhill on the other side.
Because I was going to ask, and you answered my question, you know, it was the people, you know, having to motivate you. Because I was going to ask, how did you stay motivated and kept going?
Yeah, you know, people have asked me that question a lot, and they, I always tell them, you know, I never doubted. I never thought for a second that I was gonna stop. I was gonna make it all the way, no matter what. It didn't matter. I had to take extra rest days or whatever. I was not gonna stop. I was gonna make it one way or the other. So I had the excitement at the end. I was about 10 miles from the finish line, right outside of San Francisco, in Novato, California. My front bracket broke, went in front of me. The wheel caught on that, and I went over the top, and I woke up in an ambulance. 10 miles from the finish, I didn't finish. I ended up in the hospital, but it was okay. It just scratches, bruised. Thankfully, my brother was there to help me. He was going to come pick me up anyway. So I almost made it, 10 miles short, but I almost did it.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked. And you kept going. Wow. Yo, that is honestly mind-boggling. And, you know, I'd like to know, you know, through the challenges that you have, what is the thing that you've learned? Anything, something surprising that you've learned about yourself?
Oh, wow. I don't know if I learned anything, because, you know, like I said, we learned this in Mozambique. You know, you learn to take it one day at a time. You just deal with things as they come. I guess I had that so ingrained in my, that's the way I lived all my life almost. I have to tell you, I was born with a club foot and missing nerve down my right leg. So I can't really run or really walk long distances without a great deal of pain, but I can ride a bike. So I've learned all my life, you know, that life's not necessarily fair, that things are going to come up that you deal with, and you get plug along, and God will give you the strength to make it through. All you got to do is try a little bit.
Not only is the bike ride an incredible feat physically because of what you've done, it's going to benefit Ride for Reed, which is trying to open up a coffee shop for your nephew with Down syndrome and other kids with Down syndrome down on the North Shore in New Orleans, so that they can be sent, have a job, and go work when they get out of school. Tell everybody a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're still working on trying to get that open, but it's definitely going to happen one day. There are these shops, the coffee shops. They serve a little food, cafes, kind of places all over the country, but there's nothing like that where we are. So really all the people that are in the shop, in the cafe, are special needs young people. We realize that if you go online, you can see a number of videos of these places.
And I'd like to know, through your whole journey with the 6,000 miles bike ride, and the things that you've done throughout your whole life, like what kind of impact do you hope, you know, all of this will have on people, you know, especially with people who may not be familiar with Down syndrome.
I never really thought about what I wanted the impact to be. I mean, in your life, and it's all about what God calls you to do, and you respond to that the best you can. It ends up being your life is not about you. Your life is about helping others. When you have that, you've learned that lesson. And that's one thing that Down syndrome kids teach you. As I say when I'm around Reed, you can't stop smiling. When you're around Reed, the most happy, the most joyous kid in the world. Reed is someone who, fortunately, he has no other physical issues, physical problems, except that he has not started verbally talking clearly. He just kind of grunts, you know. He's slowly learning some words and starting to talk. And he's 10 years old now, almost 11. Even though he can't talk, he loves to dance, loves to hug, he loves to play around. He will make you smile. If you don't smile around him, you're never going to smile. And that's what they teach us. So I guess if I could have anybody learn anything from my experience, it would be just that, just to learn to live life one day at a time and do what God wants you to do, not necessarily what you want to do, and make people happy. As Mother Teresa says, someone asked her, Mother Teresa, how to change the world. He said, well, you change the world by going to love your family in your own house. That's how you change the world.
One World Radio, an international collaboration that highlights the power of community radio across the globe. Every Tuesday at 4 p.m. right here on 88.7 FM, WRHU Radio Hofstra University.
89.5 FM.
Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. And today, ICN in New York. Tony, thank you very much for coming on our show.
Thank you. Thank you for looking up for us. And today we're about to share a real special moment together. Thank you.
A real special moment indeed. Now, Tony, what I want to get into first is you mentioned before the broadcast that ICN has been broadcasting for 40 years. Tell me about the history of ICN, the Italian Communication Network.
Yeah, well, Italian Communication Network starts early 80s. Grazie a Papa Mary with this vision of bringing an Italian program, a radio program, broadcasting every day. And back in those days, you know, it wasn't like today where you have so much of Italy in one way or another. So having a radio to listen to every day was really connection with the community in what the radio does, you know, representing the community, promoting the community, informing the community, and entertainment, obviously. And so it started out with the need an Italian radio present every day in the tri-state area.
So that's how it started. It started back in what year, Tony? What year did it start up?
1983, 1984. So we're in our 41st year.
So obviously you wanted to educate and inspire the community and do things with that, the Italian-American community. What really, obviously everyone wants to really motivate their community to shine, be the best that it can be. What really was ICN? How did it start? It obviously had to start off small. Tell us about how it built up through the years.
It started with, like I said, Papa Mary was the founder of this radio. Okay. And, you know, he started broadcasting daily. He used to do a news report. He used to talk about the community, inform the community, you know, play music, obviously, sports, which was very important and which still is, obviously, and so many other things that he did. Then a little bit at a time, he started inviting other producers and broadcasters that used to go on air and produce their own shows, their own programs. He used to broadcast AM, but it was under the frequency of another radio here in New Jersey.
So you spoke about different news, sports programs, things of that nature. What kind of programs does ICN offer today for its listeners, and how has it changed since its conception?
Well, today ICN Radio is what we would describe as a full Italian radio, 24 hours nonstop. We cover it all in one way or another. We do real-time news, broadcast the latest music as soon as it comes out in real time, promote the community everywhere. And also, we connect to Italy live every day now, where I see on Radio and Rai for 4 or 5 hours a day. So we're actually broadcasting live from Italy. We cover the sports and so much other information. Like, for example, now, like next week, we got Sanremo Festival. Sanremo Festival, the biggest introduction of Italian music, brand new music, yearly, and it's covered by worldwide. I mean, it goes all over the world. We've been doing this for our 20th year, broadcasting live from Sanremo, Italy, the Festival of Sanremo. But it's actually a promoting of Italy.
Tell me a little bit more about that and the history of the coverage, because you've been saying 20 years. That's quite the feat. So for listeners in the New York area or in the Cape Town area or in the Pittsburgh area, who don't know much about this festival, if you could enlighten us about what it really is and why it's so important to the Italian-American community.
Absolutely. The Festival of Sanremo is Festivale della Canzone Italiana this year, celebrating 75 years. It's 75th anniversary. Think of the Grammys. Think of, think of all these big moments in music in the United States and other locations. And this is what Sanremo is all about. It's a huge competition. This year we have 31 artists competing against each other and who's going to be winning the 75th edition, which is a big, big deal. We're talking, I don't know how many millions and millions and millions of people that watch the Festival of Sanremo from all over the world, because it's not an international, it's an intercontinental broadcasting network. Eurovisione, it's called, so it goes everywhere.
What other major events at ICN do you guys get to go travel and cover as a radio station?
In my 20 years, I covered the World Cup sports. I covered the Expo, World Expo. I did Milano 2015 World Expo, which is a huge event. It's a six-month period event. I covered the World Expo in Dubai. In 2020, and this year, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, I should be traveling to Osaka, Japan, to cover the World Expo in Japan. I covered so many other festivals all over Italy, and not only, even in other countries. And we cover what it has to do with tradition, so we cover so many of these traditional events. We visit locations, we go on locations to promote, you know, what that location has to offer, the territory, in a sense. And, of course, we talk about style. And, of course, we cover the gastronomia, the excellence of the food part of it. And there's so many shows we go to, you know, like these fairs, like here in New York, Food Expo, or it could be any other style and type. Like I was just at the Travel and Leisure show, which has to do, obviously, with traveling. And this year, right, they're estimating 100 million tourists to enter Italy, being that it's also the Jubilee year.
Was it one thing, was something about the Italian culture that ICN highlights that the listeners might not find anywhere else?
Well, we go into the particulars. We'll go into the smallest town, into the biggest city, and narrate the stories and get to know the people and get to know what's going on and tell stories just like we did today. You know, two young girls that are writing books about the Italians outside of Italy, the history. But, you know, the stories that are never told. We cover the big deal, but we also cover the smallest street in a little town that has an history and that has so much to offer.
Yes, amazing stuff. And you said you covered the smallest stories from the smallest street that nobody can even think of. So tell me, what is the one of the most memorable moments or experiences you've had with your listeners?
Oh, my God, there are so many, you know. Some of them are so exciting. Some of them, they offer you so much joy. Some of them, they offer you sadness. One in particular, and I can tell you my story. When I came here 12 years old on a big ship called the Michelangelo. So I'll leave it at that story for now.
That is absolutely amazing. One day you'll tell me the whole story, right?
Yeah.
Over the years, you know, radio and media has changed. And how has ICN Radio changed to keep up with how people are consuming media today?
Well, we've changed, you know, we upgrade like anything else. You know, we're informed, we're real time. That's important today because that's what people expect. They can get it anywhere. So, you know, if you don't give it, obviously today with the web, but with the live streaming and so on, they can get it anywhere. So, but you know what? What keeps the rapport between a voice and who's listening to it, between a radio and so on, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. So the rapport, the personal rapport, that voice that they use it, listen to, that voice that they trust, that's a very important thing too, you know, that they trust. And that voice that makes them feel good too, you know. We're not just broadcasters, we're entertainers. We cover so many rules in so many different ways. That's what people connect to, and that's what people remember, and that's what people appreciate.
And that's true. We are entertainers, and we are the people that spread the truth to the people, and they grasp it from us, right? And looking ahead, like, what do you hope ICN Radio will continue to achieve, especially in terms of its impact on Italian culture and community?
Well, my number one hope is that ICN Radio will continue to broadcast for another 100 years. First, we have at least in the present style, because I can get a lot of broadcasters broadcasting from everywhere. As a matter of fact, a lot of our broadcasters were from Italy and from other nations. They used to connect into the studio and produce their own programs and conduct them. But I want in studio. I want in studio because in studio, in live motion is a whole different way. And I'm hoping we'll get a few. My number one hope and wish is that ICN Radio will continue to broadcast in the future for many, many years to come.
And I'd like to know about ICN a bit more. Like, what? How do you choose the kind of content that gets on air, right? Like, do you mostly focus on music, or is it talk shows, news, or is it a mix of everything?
A mix of everything. We cover it all, from music to entertainment, to broadcasting news, sports. I mean, we do it all. We're a full-time, 24-hour Italian radio, which covers and promotes Italy inside and out, like I say all the time. So a lot of our programs are live from Italy, too. So we broadcast like 4 or 5 hours a day live from Italy because we connect to the number one radio in Italy, which is Rai Radio. So you're listening live, just like they do there and everywhere else. So that's who we are at ICN Radio.
America Oggi, which is the Italian-American newspaper, has a partnership with ICN, correct?
America Oggi was the owner of ICN Radio for many years. They owned it. Now I'm the owner. But for many, many years, and America Oggi, it's a good thing you brought it up, was the only Italian newspaper, printing every day outside of Italy, the only one. And there was a time when America Oggi was printing something like, I think, 60, 70, 80,000 copies a day, only in the tri-state area.
Because you were saying about America Oggi and the partnership with Rai. Tell me about how the partnership with Rai came to be and how you broadcast on Rai so often.
Mr. Salpameri started agreement between ICN Radio and Rai. So I don't know exactly how it started then. All I know is that it continues. Now we also have Radio Italia, Solo Musica Italiana, which is the only radio in Italy that broadcasts only Italian music. And it's the number one, not only in Italy, in the rest of the world. We have them airing with a program every Monday. They broadcast the top 10 songs of Radio Italia weekly, so it's another way. Had programs with so many other broadcasting networks, not that you create a relation with them, but, you know, we welcome because another slogan I use a lot, Ian, is that insieme stiamo bene. Together, we'll always accomplish more and we bring the best for the community in the best way. So as long, every time we get to do something together, just like we're doing it now, this is another example of it. So it can only add to the communication field that we're in.
You host the Chow Tony Show on ICN, because we're talking about a bunch of the program, and we never spoke about yours. How did the Chow Tony Show come to be, and what do you talk about, what do you cover, and what's your favorite part about doing the show?
Well, I was always involved in music. Music is really part of my my soul, you know, they were on music for me. It's something, it's not the same. So as a little kid, the radio always passion of, and I have one here in studio. I don't know if you ever seen these old radios from the 30s, the 40s, the big ones with these big knobs and whatever. So we had one of those at home. And every time I heard a radio, imagination was going like, oh my God, this voice, this music. It was something that really always was part of me. And so, and then I was in the entertainment field here for me, you know, presenting shows. I also had a band at one time, so into music. But I never wanted to get involved in broadcasting, even though Mr. Palmieri had chased me for many years. I didn't want to get involved. I knew the commitment. Much younger guy, so I had other things also I was interested in. But I got involved. This is my 20th year now, 20 years of the Chow Tony Show broadcasting on ICN Radio. And yeah, music plays a big part. 60s, 70s. I play it all, but mostly I'm connected to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s era. But I play it all. I mean, we play the latest songs. It comes out today, and we play it. I'm talking about mostly Italian music, but we play all kinds of music, but 90% is Italian music that we broadcast. And then everything else, communication in the information field, in the industry field, like I said before, we cover it all.
Now, something I wanted to tap into also is because you host this show where you play your kind of music. Lydia also, I believe, has a music program on Bush. Is that correct, Miss Lydia?
Yes, we do. So we also focus, our music is 80% South African and then 20% international. So that's how we run our music side here on the station.
You know, there's Lydia in Johannesburg. There's a big Italian community there. I know some of my friends have traveled there many times, and they even have relatives there. Is that correct?
Oh, amazing, because I'm in Cape Town.
Okay.
Yes. I'm down the south in Cape Town. So it's quite amazing to actually hear that huge community of Italians. Wow.
Yeah, actually, some of my friends have traveled there many, many, many times. And who knows, maybe one day I'll get to go. I'll get to make it down there.
Yes, and come to Cape Town, right?
That's another beauty of the radio. The radio, just like the airways, it brings you everywhere and anywhere. I mean, I've traveled Italy from Sicily to the Trentino Alto Adige. I covered all in a sense of territory, but, you know, obviously. When, so you go from the smallest town on the island of Sicily that you wouldn't believe what they have down there, and then to the Alps, you know. So this is what radio is. It's like an open home everywhere. It's amazing.
Tony, what have you really learned about your Italian culture through this experience of working at ICN that you perhaps might not have known if you never took the chance and became a part of the station?
Oh, my God. So much, because Italy in its diversity is amazing. It's amazing. Italy, you can go to one town, and then only 2 miles away in a different town, and everything changes. It's amazing how the culture, the tradition, even the language, because we have the dialects, no? So it's a continuous discovery. You know, I'll give you Rome, for example. Just think about it. You know, you go to Rome, you go see the Colosseum, Piazza San Pietro, the Fountain of Trevi, the Spanish Steps. But there is a Rome underground that is, you know, this is the way Italy is. This is the way Europe is, you know, in a sense. So you discover, and the food, the difference in the recipes and in the way it's made and the music, the way it changes from one place to another and so on. So
what would you say outside of that with ICN? Would you say that you have, obviously you've gone to travel and do all this stuff. What would you say is the favorite part about getting to do your show? Just having you, so we're talking about that voice in the box before that you can't really compare and beat that feeling, and that's the power of radio. What would you say is your favorite point of doing something right now, being alone in the box, talking to your audience? What would you say is your favorite part of getting that experience day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year?
It's not only my favorite part, it's my pride and joy. There's people everywhere, anyhow, doing anything, whatever. And I say it all. You might be waking up, you might be entering the car, you might be going to work, you, I don't know, you might be having a coffee, and you're listening to me, and I'm there with you. This is it's not a question of being, it's a way of living. I actually live that. And then, of course, informing them, the entertainment part of it, because it's important, no, in our daily activities. How important it is. I think everybody listens to the radio in one way or another, who likes a talk show, who likes information, who likes news, who likes music, different conversation. Everybody does their own way. And this is that. It's a bond. It's a special bond every day. It's just like breathing. It's just like eating. Once you get behind, for me, this microphone, everything, it's like everything comes together. It unites for a purpose of well-being, for a purpose of making a better day.
Making a better day. That's a beautiful thing that I think Lydia, myself, anyone working in this business should really aspire to. As we head now, dare I say it, towards the end of our segment together, unfortunately, you mentioned earlier about giving a service to the community. We're all community radio stations, all of us that broadcast on this program, One World. What would you say is a moment where you really spoke, and Lydia touched on this with you earlier, a moment where a listener really spoke to you about the impact that you had on their life and how it moved you, if you could tap into that a little bit more?
Well, sometimes when you talk about their stories, or you talk about a location where they've been, a location where they're connected to, or a moment, or a person, or an event, I love that because I'm the same way they are. When somebody else talks about my town, where I come from, oh my God, I remember this, da, da, da. When you bring out this, and then of course, when you enter into the personal part of it sometime too, it's all like come together. Using the phrase of the word favorite, distinguished, but it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing that really unifies everything and makes it so special. So yeah, that's basically it, right? Going into specifics, it's great because obviously you give attention to that subject or to that. But to me, I always like to round things out and say we're all part of it. We're all in it, and thank God for that. So, and I keep thanking my listeners all the time because I said without you, there's no reason for us to be here. We don't exist. I mean, what is our purpose? Our purpose is to be with you. And again, like I said before, and to make this day another special day for all of us.
Well, Tony, that was a very profound way, I think, for the both of us to end it, because the power of radio that you spoke about, I know I can attest to. Lydia, can you attest to that with your listeners?
Yes, I can definitely attest to that. Having a listener come back to you and tell you when you said something, it really touched me, or they could relate to what you shared with them or the information that you've given them. You feel so happy that you've actually made a difference into someone's life. So I definitely attest to that.
Okay, the next time, though, we got to do this broadcast. I'll do it in Italian. Rick does it in English. And Lydia, you can talk South African language outside of the English language too? Well,
yes, I can speak Xhosa. That's my mother language. It's Xhosa.
Next time we'll do it this way. Okay, Rick, what do you think?
I think that sounds good to me. That sounds like a plan.
Yeah. No matter.
I'll speak a little Italian now. Grazie mille, Tony. Grazie mille, Tony, for coming on the One World Radio Show. But that's kind of, even with people that I've spoke to, I'll text coworkers when I do my music program at our radio station at Hofstra, And it's like, oh, you put a smile on my face. I love this song. This song makes me think of you. I give dedications to people in my life. And it's just very nice. You hear back from listeners. Even though I know the people, it's just a very powerful feeling to know that you have the ability to make a better day for someone. And we all share that feeling because radio is one medium, one world, and that's what this show is all about.
Absolutely. And then it doesn't matter if you know the people, because in that particular song, that person becomes something, or either goes back, goes forward, or lives the moment. Because if I play a song from the 70s right now, somebody out there who's listening is going to remember when he was back in the town, when he was kissing somebody for the first time. You know what I mean? And then, of course, we could be different. We can speak any language. But when we play music, we only speak one language, you know, the universal language of music.
Universal.
So there's no difference there.
Like you said before, and one world is universal. So we thank you, Tony Pasquale and ICN, for coming on our show today.
Please take us out, Ricky. Please do.
I will. You have listened to the One World Radio Show, an international collaboration between WRHU 88.7 FM in Hempstead, New York, WRCT in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope we create for you a better day.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Mean a lot to you. I'm talking about all your secret friends over the airwaves. You're on the radio too.
You on the radio with WRCT Pittsburgh.
Dr. Kenya on the air, feel the vibe, feel the vibe. Timbers are moving side to side, side to side. Culture beat fire grooves all night long, all night long. Dance floors really hear the song, come along, come along. Feel the bass, hear the drums, let it flow, let it flow. Tempers up, vibes hot, here we go, here we go. From the south to the west, every beat, every beat. Dr. Kenya's got the sound, feel the heat, feel the heat. On Zimbo South, we gonna dance, dance, dance. Feel the rhythm, take a chance, chance, chance.
You are listening to
It's Sound of Language
on WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
Annie Chan.
So I heard a creature in the kitchen. So who come bring their cat over, or like their dog, or just come take care of me, because I am too afraid to take care of it.
So my rat story, like the rest of my life, is hilarious. I was going through a hard time and I decided to go down to the river and journal. I was like stuck on something and I journaled it out and I was crying and then I like just thinking further on the thing, which I can't even remember what it was right now. And I remember like having a moment where I was like, my therapist would be proud of me. And it was dark at that point. And so I just like laid back and settled into my satisfaction that I like, you know, made a little breakthrough on this thing. And I was like, just chilling. It must have been summer. Taking deep breaths, laid back, eyes closed, and I like heard this rustling and I was just like, oh, rabbits, because I'm feeling mystical, mythical. Of course it's cute nature that, because I have I was such an idiot. I remember being like, I feel so at peace, like, wouldn't it just be beautiful if it was just, like, a bunny rabbit? And then I felt something by my head, and I still was, like, bunny rabbit. I am one with nature. I'm attuned. I am beating my demons. It's so funny to say this out loud to somebody else. I hope you enjoy this. And then I sat up and I pulled my phone out because I thought to, I don't know. I think I actually went to text my therapist. And I can't see anything because it's like dark and the light of my phone is in the way. And I feel something on my foot and I fucking look down and it was that like time froze. And it was a rat on my shoe. Which means it was probably a rat that was trying to nibble on my live body. And my ass was like, I'm Snow White. I am in union with nature. And in a way, I was in union with nature. But in a way where if I would have stayed still long enough, that rat would have bit me and made me bleed. All right, that's it. Have a good day. Okay, so now it's almost 7.